You are listening to The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.
I'm Marcy Silman. A new study out today finds rich and poor farther apart in the nation's big cities than in the rest of the country. That might be what you'd expect to hear, but here in Seattle, where the debate over income inequality is heating up, there's a bit of a surprising result. Alan Berube at the Brookings Institution wrote this study, and I spoke with him earlier today.
Seattle actually has, by our measures, a lower level of inequality than most other major American cities and pretty close to the national average, which, I don't know, but to me was surprising in light of how center stage inequality and the effects of inequality have been in the political debates in Seattle recently.
What do you mean when you say relative to other cities? What did you expect to find here?
I think, like a lot of other sort of large and successful cities, especially those with a technology sector like San Francisco and Boston and even Washington, D.C. and New York, that Seattle would rank close to the top when it came to income inequality. But it ranks closer to the middle and actually in the bottom half of major American cities when it comes to the distance between the rich and the poor on income.
You write that not all unequal cities are created equally. What does that mean?
Cities can have a similar measure of inequality, and yet there are two things that go into that measure. One is how much people at the top make, and one is how much people at the bottom make. And you could have people at the top making a lot and people at the bottom making, you know, a little more than average. And you could have the same measure of inequality as a city where people at the top didn't make all that much, but people at the bottom had very, very low incomes, too. San Francisco and Miami, for instance, have very similar inequality measures, but the rich in San Francisco make twice what the rich in Miami do, but so do the poor.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned San Francisco, because not only is it on the West Coast, just south of us, or a few thousand miles south of us, but
right.
we, like San Francisco, are a technology hub. We have a lot of highly paid Microsoft and Amazon workers who want to live in Seattle. They're drawing a lot of arrows for driving up rents, protests.
Yep.
Buses have been blocked that carry Microsoft employees to work. So why are we not seeing that same kind of income disparity in this city that you saw in San Francisco?
So the first thing I'd say is we're looking at data from 2012, and things are happening fast in Seattle right now. So things may be changing. But one very interesting thing about Seattle to me was that among the 50 largest cities, lower income households in Seattle had, the third highest income levels, which may reflect that actually, you know, low-income people in Seattle do better than their counterparts elsewhere. They make better wages, or they're more likely to be employed. But it also may reflect the fact that there are fewer and fewer opportunities for very low-income households to actually live in the city of Seattle, and more actually getting pushed out into surrounding territory, including South King County.
As you mentioned when we started the conversation, that given all the talk in Seattle about raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, that we're kind of leading this national conversation about income inequality, there is this implication, given the buzz about this issue, that this is a problem that's getting worse. Is that true?
Well, we looked at a five-year trend from 2007 to 2012 in our report, and actually over that time, inequality didn't get worse in Seattle, at least sort of measured from before the recession to today. I do think what's going on in Seattle today with the boom of technology jobs and so many Silicon Valley firms moving not just to the region, but to the city itself and to South Lake Union and surrounding neighborhoods may actually be creating pressure and upward trends at the top that we just haven't detected in the data yet.
And so I know this was a study of cities, but if you could generalize about the direction that the country is heading, would you say that the growing urban poor are where we need to focus attention, or, you know, are people looking at rural areas and seeing that there's an increasing gap between rich and poor in those parts of the country as well?
I do think that cities and big urban areas and metropolitan areas are very much on the front lines of increases in inequality and high inequality. It doesn't mean it's not happening in other places, but I think it is more pronounced in our very biggest places, which have always concentrated more of the rich and the poor in the same place than the rest of the country. I think the more that we can do, though, that alleviates and addresses concerns about inequality that's universal and touches a lot of different places at the same time, the better off and more sustainable it'll be, even for the big cities where you see it occurring today.
So will a national increase in the minimum wage make a significant difference in this gap between rich and poor?
And the studies I've seen suggest that, you know, as many as 16 million workers would see an immediate benefit from a bump in the minimum wage. And I think you'd find a lot of those workers in and around big cities today. So, you know, I do think it would make a difference. And it would make a big difference for the federal government to step up and do that so that each individual city wasn't trying to fight this battle on its own and potentially lose jobs or economic opportunity to surrounding territory as a result.
Alan Berube of the Brookings Institution. This is The Record on KUOW.